We are back at it.
My responsibility is to make this place great again.
Champions of the Big 12.
This is not the 1980s OSU.
Remember, always have faith in God, but have faith in yourself, and certainly have faith in the Cowboys.
Let her rip.
We are back at it, and Oklahoma State football is officially back. Welcome back to the Pistols Firing Podcast. I'm Carson Cunningham, joined as always by Colby Powell. Colby, you were up in Stillwater, my man. What is going on? What happened? Where are you at right now?
That's what happened. It's a bad day to be a hater, Carson. I don't know what happened at H.H. Chapman Stadium. I can't explain that to you, but I can explain what I saw today. And what I saw today was a team who thought that they had aspirations to be one of the best teams in the country get manhandled by a team that had not beaten an FBS opponent in two calendar years. Carson, I'm telling you, the last bedlam, I have not felt things like what I felt today since the final bedlam. The final bedlam, it put a curse on us. It put a curse on us, and that curse was in place for two calendar years, and it was broken today at Boone Pickens Stadium. I am equal parts exhausted from a long day, heat, rain delay, driving. I'm equal parts exhausted, wound up, shocked, stupefied. I don't even, yeah, you're gonna have to slow me down. I could go forever. I mean, it was an unbelievable day.
You know, I got a lot of flack obviously for picking Oklahoma State to win 10 games. That's deserved after you lose to Tulsa, but I think a lot of people also gave me flack for being optimistic on the post-game show. I think maybe even you, Colby, might have been a little bit surprised at some of my optimism, because I just felt what we saw today is what this team was supposed to be. I think if you look back at the Tulsa game, I don't think it's even questionable now at this point that they held everything back against Tulsa. They thought they could just roll their helmet out and dominate and win. And their play calling reflected that. Their attitude, their mindset reflected that. I don't think it helped that Jacob Sexton snapped his leg in half six plays into the game. That certainly contributed to that as well. But wow, what a performance from Oklahoma State. The biggest win in a long time, and really one of the most improbable wins, really, when you think about it, in school history, based on the fact that they lost to Tulsa, facing a team in Oregon that a lot of people had picked to win the national championship, and really flat-out dominate them, Colby. I pulled up the stats here, and we'll start with this. These are the team stats we have here. So this is the final stats, and it was even worse, Colby, at halftime. Wow. But Oklahoma State had 554 yards, 25 first downs to Oregon's 12. Oregon was just 5 of 14 on third down. The defense played incredible, which we'll get to. Just 281 yards for Oregon. Obviously, Mestemaker, the big story here, 317 through the air. But, Colby, I think Dan Lanning had it here. Let me pull up the quote. And I thought this kind of summed it up very well. He said, quote, "The score was closer than it really was because it wasn't close in a lot of ways. We got our asses kicked in a lot of areas. Tons of credit to Coach Morris and his staff. And if it wasn't for takeaways we had on defense, it doesn't even look like it looked. Whatever that means. That being said, there's a lot of opportunity for improvement." So that's the head coach of Oregon, Colby, really summing it up quite well. I thought Oklahoma State really dominated this game. And if it wasn't for two fluky deflections that just land right in the breadbasket of, I guess the first one was more of a true interception. The pick six was just an incredible play, but it was deflected. Without those two kind of balls that could have gone anywhere landing in Oregon defender's hands, Colby, this game is really just pure domination from pillar to post from OSU.
Yeah, and you know, the pick sixes, they distort the possessions a little bit and the total yards a little bit because Oregon doesn't get to run plays. We get the ball back, all that stuff. But I was amazed at how we dominated Oregon in the trenches. Like it was night and day from what we saw a week ago. It looked like an entirely different team. And we discussed Thursday night, like, if Oklahoma State wins this game, if Oklahoma State's competitive, how did it happen? And you and I kind of agreed, all the people in the chat kind of agreed, like, that would be a fluke outcome. And we would need a series of fluke incidents throughout the game for Oklahoma State to actually compete and potentially win the game. And that's not what happened at all. Fluke out fluke instances is what Oregon was getting. I mean, Oregon basically got 14 free points deflected to them on balls that were batted at the line of scrimmage. You know, good on them for getting their hands up, but those balls can land anywhere. And you're telling me that both times they land right in the hands of Ducks and one of them gets housed and one of them gets taken to the one for a walk-in touchdown? Outside of that, I mean, it was pure domination from Oklahoma State. I could not believe some of the throws Mestemaker was making today. Like, this is what we were sold. This is the team we were promised. This is the offense we were promised. And the defense, my God, Carson, you want to talk about the ceiling of the team. We have not seen anything like what that defense put on display today since 2021. The D-line, best defensive line performance in recent memory. The corners, I mean, they gave up a couple throughout the day. Those guys on the other side are getting paid too, and they're pretty damn good. But how many times did Dante Moore drop back, and he's looking, and he's looking, and he's looking, and there's nothing there, and he just has to fire it out to his right into the turf? It was a complete team effort from Oklahoma State. I cannot pinpoint a single weakness from any group offensively, any group defensively. The kicker, serious pressure kicks in big time moments in the fourth quarter of that game. Absolute nails. The punter, Lockie, shout out to the Aussie. He was booming them. I mean, seriously, every single position group, every unit, the coaching was phenomenal. It was clear. They did things the way they needed to be done during the week. Eric Morris said after the game that they didn't go indoors this week. Every practice was outdoors. These are the elements we're playing in. These are the elements that we are practicing in. And the Oregon crowd, Carson, so big shout out to the Echo Contracting guys. Texted me during the rain delay and said, hey, we're down here at the field suites in the east end zone and we can get some extra wristbands if y'all want to come down here. I'm like, absolutely, we're going to come down there. So we go down there and there's Oregon fans all around. So we get to talking to the Oregon fans throughout the game and they were wonderful. The Oregon fans were wonderful. Couldn't have been nicer. But several of them said, I don't know how y'all live here. I don't know. I mean, I can't hardly go outside. Like, I feel like I'm going to die in this heat. And the Oregon players walking up the tunnel at halftime. So where we were at, the field suites in the east end zone, you have to walk up and around and up the tunnel. Well, the Oregon guys walk up the other tunnel. So you're crisscrossing with the players at halftime as you're walking up. So I am not in favor of any vile trash talk toward athletes, but friendly banter and friendly trash talk, I love. So I let out a big loud, that Oklahoma heat hits different, as they were walking past. And I don't know who it was. It looked like a linebacker looked over at me and just gave me one of these, the bird, right in my face through the fence. And I was like, oh, baby, we're cooking. OSU hockey was lining the fence, letting them have it as they were heading up the ramp. They looked spent, dude, totally exhausted. That I'm telling you, that Oklahoma heat hits different when you spent the whole summer in Eugene, Oregon.
Yeah, they were reporting on that during the game, Colby, that the players were drinking pickle juice and just really cramping up, and the heat actually did get to them. And, you know, we started off with that weather delay. I mean, you were there in the stadium. I wasn't really paying attention. I was running to Lowe's before the game, and you texted me, like, how long's the delay? And I was like, crap, it's already past 11. I missed the start of kickoff, and there's a big delay, obviously. I thought the delay might help Oregon get their body clocks more in tune, because the game was supposed to kick off, like, 9 o'clock Oregon time, but you were huddled under the stadium, right? For like an hour and a half. Wasn't that the long delay?
Yeah. And until we went down with the Echo crew, we were underneath, and it's like, it was brutal, because if there's lightning within 8 miles, then you can't start for 30 minutes. And lightning was like 8 miles north of Boone Pickens Stadium. So it was hot and sunny at Boone Pickens Stadium, but there was lightning within 8 miles, so we just couldn't do anything. So there's 40,000 people packed into the concourse underneath, sitting, leaning up against the walls, just trying to kill time because nobody wants to go out and sit and cook in the sun for any longer than possible. But it did probably allow Oregon's body clocks to get caught up a little bit, but it also moved the game more into the heat of the day. Like, it was much cooler at 10:30 outside than it was at 12:30 outside, at 1:30, 2:30 outside. I'm telling you, that heat helped. And Carson, we have not experienced a Boone Pickens crowd like that. Bedlam, but the Arkansas game, the crowd was pretty lit for the Arkansas game 2 years ago. By the way, the Arkansas game in 24 was our last Power Four victory. We won that game 39-31. So 24 months apart, we won games 39-31 for back-to-back Power Four victories. The heat had played a big role, and I'm telling you, I had forgotten what an just immense home field advantage Boone Pickens Stadium is when it is packed and it is rocking. And Oklahoma State gave the fans reason early in that game to let Oregon feel the weight of Boone Pickens Stadium for 3.5 hours. And I'm telling you, they felt the weight of Boone Pickens Stadium all day. It was loud in there. I mean, it was packed. It was a classic, epic BPS crowd.
I've got a stat to back that factor up. The fact that I've always said that Oklahoma State, Boone Pickens Stadium, is one of the toughest places to play in the country. And I have a stat to back that up here in a second. But we got a couple super chats here. Blake Davidson said, guys, we did it. I can't believe this just happened. You and me both. And this is an interesting stat here from J-Rod. I have some more game notes as well. Per ESPN, it's the second largest upset since the FBS and FCS split. That's pretty incredible, Colby. But here are some of the game notes afterwards. I got some other notes here too. But just with the Oklahoma State win, Colby, this is their first win over an AP top 6 team since the win against Notre Dame in the Fiesta Bowl. It's their first over an AP top 10 team since beating Oklahoma in Bedlam in 2023. You brought that up at the top of the show. And this is pretty crazy. This is Oklahoma State's fifth win in their last 6 matchups with AP top 10 opponents inside Boone Pickens Stadium.
Wow.
This right here proves what a tough place Boone Pickens Stadium is to play. They beat Oregon, obviously, just now. They beat Oklahoma in 2023, ranked 10th in the country. Beat Oklahoma, ranked 10th in the country in 2021. They beat Oklahoma, number 7 in the country in 2019. Beat West Virginia, 7th in the country in 2018. And beat Texas, 6th in the country in 2018. They also snapped Oregon's 12-game road winning streak. That was the longest in FBS. They snapped their Oregon's 22-game winning streak when scoring 30 or more points.
Wow.
It's 30. Considering the last 2 or 3 years we've had on this podcast, Colby, this might be the craziest one. Oklahoma State has now won 31 consecutive home openers. That's the longest streak in all of college football.
That's insane.
It's the third longest streak overall since at least 1979. The only longer streaks are Ohio State from 1979 to 2013, and Florida won 34 in a row from 90 to 2023. Let's see here. OSU improved to 8-4 at home against AP top 10 teams since 2010. And again, this is just a huge testament to the culture that Mike Gundy built, this culture of the tailgating scene there that, again, I've said I would put up against anywhere else in the country. And the fact that the fans have continued to fill this stadium based on what's happened the last 2 years. They filled it up last year as the worst team in the country. And there's more stats and stuff here, but those are some of the ones I have at the top of my head here, Colby.
Yeah, those are unbelievable. And Carson, considering the context, this is one of the more shocking, if not the most shocking outcome, I want to say, of my lifetime. It feels very, very recency biased. I just got home an hour ago. The adrenaline's still pumping. But whenever
I think you got to put context. the first Bedlam win for Les Miles, yes, in 2001. OSU was 5-7 that year. Oklahoma was playing for the national championship. They were at the pinnacle of it was the year after they won the national championship, 2001. OSU was a huge underdog. You had Josh Fields as a true freshman on the road in Norman. You had Chris Sims up in the stands just praying OU would lose so they could go to the Big 12 championship game, and that ended up happening. I think this is right up there with 2001 Bedlam.
Yes, in terms of shock. I mean, you just, the context surrounding this is 2 years of just pain. Just 2 full years of pain, 21 straight FBS losses. You mixed a weak win against UT Martin, FCS UT Martin, in there to open the season last year. The end of the Mike Gundy era, the beginning of the Eric Morris era, falling flat on your face last week against Tulsa. Like, it just felt like all of the air was sucked out of the room with that loss to Tulsa last week. And coming in, I mean, 24-point dogs, and just nobody's picking OSU to win this game. How could you? How could you watch what happened at Chapman Stadium last week and think Oklahoma State was going to beat Oregon? And it's like Blake Davidson says here, if it was going to happen, there were so many ways I could have thought that maybe Oklahoma State pulls something off. Physically dominating Oregon on the offensive and defensive lines, that's something I didn't see coming. It's a testament to Eric Morris. It's a testament to Skylar Cassidy. It's a testament to the 5 guys up front. Sean Torgerson, take a bow, young man. Take a bow. FCS Portland State battles for a job at Oklahoma State, has to come in week 2 against Oregon as the starting left tackle after an injury puts him in that position. He was phenomenal today. Some of the things happening on the defensive line, Carson, there was a play in the second quarter. It was like a 3rd and 8. Dante Moore takes the snap. He drops back. We're only rushing 3. And it was at this moment I turned around and I told my dad and the Echo guys, I'm like, we've got a defensive coordinator. Look at the way this was coached. Malik Charles gets the sack, but our right defensive end on a three-man rush takes the right tackle and just bulls him backward, stays outside Dante Moore, bulls him backward, because his role was to force Dante Moore to step up. On the other side, left side of the defensive end, left defensive end, is Malik Charles. He fakes like he's going to push the tackle back, just like the right DN did. He bails out of it, spins underneath the tackle as Dante Moore steps up, because the right end forced him there. Malik Charles falls right into his lap. It was chess. It was absolute chess from Skylar Cassidy. Dante Moore looked remarkably uncomfortable all day. He had happy feet. He didn't look confident throwing the ball. He kept scrambling and just, like I said earlier, just chucking it into the turf. I was blown away by the performance of both lines. And, Eric Morris, Sean Brophy, Skylar Cassidy, and all the young men who put that uniform on today. We were incredibly critical last week. Carson Cobb, too. He was great today. They fixed everything. Everything we were critical of last week, and I would still say rightfully critical of, they fixed it all, Carson, in 6 days. Every last thing. They fixed it all, and they put together one of the best performances we've ever seen on that field.
Yeah, and I want to kind of grade each unit, offense and defense. I have a lot of thoughts on Skylar Cassidy and the way the defense played. I think that the ceiling of this team has risen based on what I've seen from the defense through two games. But off the top, before we do that, Colby, I do want to say I really feel like Eric Morris took a lot of stock in what happened against Tulsa. He's always been uber, uber aggressive on fourth down calls. Always has. That's been one of his calling cards. And I thought his restraint from doing that in this game against Oregon, taking the 3 points when Dan Lanning would not. Dan Lanning is now 0-for-6 on the season on fourth downs, including one of the most mind-numbing decisions ever. I'm pretty sure you have thoughts on that.
With 7 minutes left, that's the one you're talking about, right? Yes. What is he doing? That was down there right in front of us, and we're like, all right, we're going to have 7 minutes. Let's go on. And then they're sending the offense back out. We were beside ourselves, and Carson, I don't know about you, our defense was dominant all day. I never felt like they were going to pick up that fourth down, and the play got blown up immediately. Our line went with Dante Moore as he went. The corners were locked onto the receivers. There was nothing there. I was shocked they went for that play. Dan Lanning was, he's a great coach, one of the best coaches in the country. That was a nightmare of a decision.
Well, he's getting roasted for that decision, and rightfully so. And I think it was a total role reversal from the Tulsa game, whereas against Tulsa, Eric Morris was just going for it even on his own 30. It wasn't with, 6 minutes left in the game. But I thought Morris's restraint, they were 1-for-1 on fourth down, took the points, played field position, relied on his defense. That, to me, showed a lot of growth from a young head. He's still a young head coach. He actually said this, too, in postgame. I didn't really realize this. He lost his first two games at Incarnate Word, and he lost his first two games at North Texas, who said, hey, this is a big improvement. I'm 1-1, and we all kind of expected him to be 1-1, but we obviously didn't predict losing to Tulsa and beating Oregon. So that was one of my bigger takeaways. Morris's restraint, taking the points, showed a very level head in a game that got tight, even though Oklahoma State did dominate the yardage. But I think we'd be remiss, Cole, if we started anywhere else besides Drew Mestemaker. And look, we were very critical of the team, and I think no one got more criticism than Drew Mestemaker. That's the heavy hat. That's the heavy crown that you wear as the quarterback making $3.5 million a year. And a lot of people were, I believe, rightfully questioning his ability, his fortitude. I mean, he looked scared, frankly, at times against Tulsa. Missed a lot of wide open throws. And I don't think there's been a bigger cojones play that I can remember in OSU history than the scramble, the hurdle at the goal line, the touchdown here, just getting flipped on his back, gets the wind knocked out of him. And what can you say? I mean, Colby, he had unbelievable statistics. I can't figure out how to get back to our normal view here. Let me go. There we go.
Yep.
What an answer from Drew Mestemaker. He completely outplays the guy that everyone thought would be a top five pick in Dante Moore. He had over 100 yards rushing. And I'll just start here, Colby. I think the first play of the game, the 75-yard almost touchdown, that set the tone for the entire game because Oklahoma State, as we know, couldn't run the ball against Tulsa. That from the very jump made Oregon have to respect the pull, from Estimaker, and they utilized that a bunch. They had a lot of play actions off of it. Everything went from there. And look, he's not a statue, Colby. He had some wheels there. I thought he got in and scored. He must have stepped out, but I thought that set the tone for the entire game.
Yeah, it did. And Oklahoma State was able to go back to that. It gave Hawkins more room. I thought it was a brilliant call on the first play of the game. I don't think that that was like an RPO that Mestemaker was reading the end. I think that was designed. Mestemaker was keeping it the whole time. Everybody's going to think you're just going to give it to Hawkins and go. I thought that was a brilliant, brilliant call. Whether that was Morris, Profi, Mestemaker, however they got their heads together and decided that that's what they wanted to do. It was a great, great call early in that game to have that set up throughout the day. Drew Mestemaker was nearly the leading rusher on the team today. He had 6 rushes for 109 yards and a touchdown with a long of 75. That's 18.2 per rush. And Carson, it was the first play of the game and it was the last play of the game where Mestemaker keepers. When you needed 3 yards to take knees and ice that thing, I mean, everybody in green is selling out for Caleb Hawkins. He's a lot to handle. You've got to be ready. They thought we were just going to give it to him and hope he could go pick up 3 yards. And Drew went and got it done. 26 of 43 today, 317 yards, 2 touchdowns, 2 picks. The 2 picks, a little misleading. Those were on batted balls. He got it to Wyatt Young and Justin Bowick, who we've all said should be the guys. 5 for 121 and a touchdown for Bowick. For Young. 5 for 81 for Bowick. It was a masterful performance from Drew Mestemaker. And Carson, there were 20-plus NFL scouts in attendance who came to watch both sides today, but they were there to watch Dante Moore and Jeremiah McClellan. Like, let's call a spade a spade. And I would just like to say the opposite of what I said after the Tulsa game. NFL people, go away. You can't have him. He's ours. Please leave. Don't come back. You don't need to come back for the Texas Tech game. You don't need to come back at any point this season. Please go away. He was unbelievable. Everything.
Colby, yeah. You might as well just embrace it. This is going to be a one and done for Drew Mestemaker. He's not coming back.
Some of those throws today were insane. The one up the left sideline to Wyatt Young, I mean, he's covered. There's almost nowhere to put that ball in. The arc up underneath it lands like a pillow in his hands. Some of the throws across the middle, the throw to Cobb in the end zone, I mean, that looks very routine.
My favorite throw was the back foot as he takes a hit in stride to Wyatt Young, touchdown. I thought that was an NFL caliber throw that the scouts upstairs watched on replay, I'm sure, and were just drooling. Like, as bad as he looked in game one, this is the quarterback that we recruited and signed for over $3 million. He could make every throw. He's not a statue, ran for over 100 yards. And I thought he showed a lot of toughness. I mentioned the hurdle touchdown run, that hit he took off his back foot. I thought he was a real leader out there and guys followed. And I thought he set the tone for the entire team. And look, he knew the pressure coming into this game that he had to play much better than anything against Tulsa. And he flat out delivered and really outplayed who many people think might be the number one overall pick in the NFL draft. If I'm grading quarterback, it's gotta be A+.
Yeah, it's an A+ just through the roof. Really a pretty legendary performance. I mean, I guess that we can just burn last week. Just burn what happened in Tulsa. Chalk it up to game one nerves. I mean, the throws that he's missing out wide against Tulsa last week, the throw up the sideline to Hawkins, that was an easier throw than the one he made to Young today. Like, we're just burning what happened in Tulsa and chalking it up to game one nerves, because the Drew Mestemaker we watched play today is the guy that played all season last year for North Texas. And for the people who were worried about Mean Green North and what the ceiling could be, again, I'm just burning the tape, what happened against Tulsa week one, because after what we saw today, it's pretty obvious to me that last week, I don't think Oklahoma State respected its opponent, and I think they went in and they got punched in the mouth and they weren't ready, and they were soft and they crumpled. They didn't make the key plays in the key moments. But to fix it all in a week, and Mestemaker just – I can't sing his praises enough. I mean, 426 yards of total offense from Drew Mestemaker. It's unbelievable. It's unbelievable. And the flying through the air, that was at our end zone down there. And it's just, I mean, what a play. What a play. What a player.
That's an all-time cojones play. Yeah. And I was actually reminded of, what year was that? The years run together. I think it's 2006, Bedlam in Stillwater. Zach Robinson, very similar play. It was late in the game, 2 or 3 minutes. A lot of people in the comments will probably remember this. He hurdles, same manner, gets kind of helicoptered and fumbled on the 1 yard line, and OU ultimately won the game. Unbelievable job from Estemaker to hang on to that ball, because he got hit twice. He got hit on the hurdle, and then he got hit on the way coming down, and then obviously on his back. But I was reminded of that play. And I think you mentioned the Tulsa game, and again, I took a heaping pile of crap this past week for picking Oklahoma State to win 10 games. And I don't apologize for it. Like that, everyone who gave me crap, including that, where's that jabroni from last show? What was his name? Like OSU getting the hopper. I told him to expose himself on accident. Where's that jabroni? Anyway, I don't make any apologies for that, because this is what I expected to see. This team right here. Do I think they're going to be closer to this performance or Tulsa the rest of the way? I would say this performance against Oregon. I really would.
I agree.
And then you're playing Big 12 teams with this offense. And again, Colby, like before people just write off Oregon, I pulled this quote up too. Let's see here. So Oregon's defense, the talk in their camp coming into this year was they think it's the best defense in school history. That's not me talking. That's Oregon. Their new defensive coordinator, Chris Hampton, said in the fall, we want to be feared when we play football games. Well, they're afraid of Drew Mestemaker in Oklahoma State, because Oregon returned 8 starters on defense. They added another from a rival Big Ten team, and they stacked the roster with enough depth, according to them, to absorb key injuries. And they did have 2 great plays on deflected interceptions. But don't just start writing Oregon off as just overrated. Like this is a team that said they had their best defense in school history, and OSU just lit them up. So the reason I bring that up is the reason I was so bullish on this team winning 10 games is this offense going to play a Big 12 schedule now after the last non-conference game. And they don't play 3 of the 4 best defenses in the Big 12. So what you saw today against Oregon is going to happen even bigger against some other teams in the league. Now, can they do that every single week? We have to see. I don't want to get too far ahead of myself, but I still don't think my prediction is that crazy. I don't. So all the people that gave me crap for a week, shove it. Shove it right down your throats, because this is the team I expected to see. I think we're going to put that Tulsa game up on a shelf. The shelf of mystery. Right next to it is the South Alabama drubbing, in which Mike Gundy played his son at quarterback. I think that was a part of it as well. I'm still not over that. What other games on there? The game where Mason Rudolph was in the top 5 and they just got run off the field by TCU and Gary Patterson.
Yeah.
That game's up there on games I didn't see coming. But I make no apologies for picking this team. 10 wins is still alive, by the way, Colby. It's still alive.
I mean, how is it not alive? You picked them to start 1-1. They started 1-1. We all picked them to start 1-1. For the record, everybody was right. Everybody was right. They're 1-1, just like we said. I think 1-1 this way is almost more satisfying, because it shows us a ceiling that we didn't know was there prior to today. And I don't know about you, I'm feeling pretty good. The vibes are good today. I'm ready to just throw week one out and just chalk it up to week one, new place, new coaching staff, new players, just week one nonsense. The way that we have started 1-1 is so much more uplifting than if we had gone and beaten Tulsa 45-17 last week and they don't look good at all. And then we come back home and Oregon beats us 45-31 or something. Like, that would not feel nearly as good as like, okay, last week was a disaster. We all had to be in pain for 7 extra days as Oklahoma State fans. I don't know about the rest of you. I've been in pain plenty of my life as an Oklahoma State fan. I can stomach 7 extra days if this is the result. And we don't know what this team is going to look like week in, week out the rest of the season. I still want to see them do it on the road, obviously. I'm telling you, the home field advantage at Boone Pickens Stadium, it is that place. It's unbelievable. Being down like on the field today, it feels like the whole place is just collapsing in on you. The way sound radiates throughout that stadium is unbelievable. We still need to see them do it on the road. We're going to need to see a level of consistency, obviously, throughout the season. It's just like somebody just said in the comments, Tulsa's losing to Sam Houston. Yeah, we're just throwing week one out. It was a fluke. Week one was a fluke. You come out in week two, you've seen what the ceiling of this team can be. You've got to do it consistently. Try not to have the letdown weeks. You've got to be able to do it on the road. But there's no reason for anyone now who was bullish on this team preseason to not just go right back to that. Because like even you, 10-2, had them starting 1-1. So just throw last week out. We're right back where we should have started. And if you were bullish before the season, you have every right to feel the same way today.
Yeah. Trabers talked about me a lot on the radio this week. Jim and I are great friends. He's been nothing but kind to me. He's not kind to very many people. So I always felt very honored that he's always been so nice to me, gracious to me, and let me host his show a few times. I texted him in the latter half of the game, fourth quarter of the game. I said, this is the OSU team I expected to see week one. They're going to light up the Big 12. They don't play three of the top four defenses in that league. Buckle up. So we'll see if Jim brings that up this week. But I love Jim. I'm not taking any shots at Jim. Jim rightfully thought I was crazy, I guess, after week one, they lose to Tulsa. I think he was a little crazy picking OSU to go 5-7 based on the talent they acquired, based on having an NFL-level quarterback, an NFL-level running back, NFL-level wide receivers. But let's get back to our grades, Colby. I think we got to go here. Offensive line, and Eric Worthen, 1164. With the super chat. Appreciate that. How about zero sacks allowed by the O-line? Great day to be a Cowboy. That's where I got to give the offensive line, Colby, an A+. They lost two players in this game. The center went out for an IV. The right guard was injured, had to be replaced. Not only did they give up zero sacks, Colby, they gave up one tackle for loss. One. And I think I discussed this on the last pod. I think your play calling can really help your offensive line. Drew Mestermaker also helped his offensive line by moving around the pocket, scrambling a few times. Obviously, there were some design runs in there, and that keeps defenses more honest. But Oregon was bringing it. They were bringing the pass rush throughout the game. They were even doing some play calls to try to mitigate that. Dusty Dvorak rightly called that out during the game, and I think he just does a fantastic job calling games. Good to see another former sports animal on national broadcast. But Colby, I mean, what a turnaround from week one. Cody Krill, the offensive line coach, Eric Morris said that group was coached the hardest this week, was called out the hardest. They had to really answer the bell. And man, what an answer against really an NFL quality defensive line they were going up against.
Yeah, we talked about the Oregon defensive line on Thursday night. I mean, they've got four guys on that line who have been stars in their time at Oregon and who are expected to play on Sundays. And look, that Oregon team is really good. You're going to hear some people today and throughout this next week try to tell you, well, maybe Oregon's not as good as we thought and this, that, and the other. Oregon brought everybody back to go win a title. I pulled up this tweet from Jeff Schwartz. Jeff Schwartz, big offensive line guy, former NFL lineman. Mitchell Schwartz, his brother, played for the Chiefs for a long time on the O-line, and he's like number one national football media guy, Oregon fan. And he said, the worst loss in years, inexcusable, complete meltdown in every aspect of the team. But then here's what else he said about Oregon. You can make the case, considering the expectations for this season, it's the worst loss ever. Everyone came back to win a title, is what he said. Everyone for Oregon came back to win a title. And Sean Torgerson and Ashton Leppo and Tyler Mercer and Johnny Dixon and Josh Hansen and Desmond McGee pushed them around. I'm blown away, Carson. Caleb Hawkins, 4.8 yards per attempt. Iowa Day, 4.8 yards per attempt. And then obviously the 18 for Drew Mestermaker. One tackle for loss, and it was on kind of a fluky play. It's not like they blew anything up. Mestermaker had time. He had pockets to throw the ball down the field. Oklahoma State was moving the pocket effectively. Oklahoma State was using motion effectively. Oklahoma State was... I thought much more disciplined in their schemes today. Like last week, there was that time on 4th-and-1 where the line shifted left and they should have shifted right, and then Cobb gets knocked backward and you get stuffed on 4th-and-short. Today, the assignments went where they were supposed to go every single time. Like the level of coaching that took place this week in Stillwater, it has to be commended. I can't believe how well that unit played, Carson. It's been a decade. Has it been more than a decade? When's the last time? 2015, the line was really bad. 13 was 2013, the last time the offensive line was really good. And I mean, is this offensive line going to be really good all year? I guess we'll see. But the only defensive line they're going to see that's going to even remotely approach in talent what they saw today is Texas Tech's defensive line. And the performance today from our O-line was incredible. I'm sure the heat was bothering those guys and everything. I don't care. A+ for the offensive line. I mean, we're giving out a lot of A+s today, and every last one of them is deserved.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that's, this is going to be kind of a byproduct of the NIL era. This super chat from Failure is an option today. No one has ever beat a top 10 team after a 10 game losing streak first ever. I do think NIL era opens you up to some of those inconsistencies that we saw against Tulsa and we saw against Oregon. And I think that's ultimately part of it. And I don't know about you, Colby, but you're telling me there's a chance. Oklahoma State becomes the fourth team to score 39 points versus Dan Lanning at Oregon. The other three won the national championship. That would be Indiana in 2025, Georgia in 2022, and Ohio State in 2024.
Amazing.
That's from Brett McMurphy, OSU grad. And also, how about this, Colby? This is Oklahoma State's 127th season playing college football. And until today, they had never hosted a sitting member of the Big Ten Conference for a game in Stillwater. Many are saying that the Big Ten still stinks and that the Big Ten is afraid of Payne County. First time ever even venturing onto Payne County turf, and they get sent home with a loss. I mean, I don't know if that's a coincidence to me, Colby. I think Penn State wants no smoke. Penn State does not want to come down to Murphy's and Joe's and get their tails kicked as we shove cheese fries down their throat.
Yeah, I mean, look, we're feeling ourselves today. There's no better time for a Big Ten stinks than today. Yeah, that was amazing. I think Layla was fixing to holler about Bullet in here, and then she had to run off. Maybe she'll be back in a minute. Yeah,
how was her day? She got to watch Bullet run a lot.
It was unbelievable. So we had hard conversation last night. She looks at me last night before bed. She goes, "Dad, is Bullet going to run tomorrow?" I said, "Kiddo, I said, hey, we're going next week too, and I promise next week Bullet's going to run a lot." I said, "I don't want to make any promises for tomorrow. We might see Bullet. We might not. The team we're playing against is really good." My hopes were not real high for what was going to be happening at Boone Pickens Stadium today. And, man, we were driving back in the car, and she was hilarious sitting back there in the back seat. She napped for the first 45 minutes of the drive because she was exhausted. And then she woke up, and she was chipper. And she was like, "That was so much fun today because our team won, and our team doesn't normally win the games." And she said, "And Bullet running wild." And she was having a good old time. Here, you want to say something about Bullet?
Bullet was running wild.
Bullet was running wild, she says. Yeah, there she is. There she is. She had a great day. It was a wonderful, wonderful day. So, yeah, she had a good time. And I'm a huge fan of the scheduling Murray State after Oregon, because I'd be real worried about a letdown if we had to play a conference game next week. Murray State coming to town. Yeah. Chef's kiss. Well done, Chad Weiberg. By the way, I met Chad Weiberg today. He walked over and down, and so I hollered at him, "Chad," and he came over. I shook his hand. I said, "Hi, it's nice to meet you. I'm Colby Powell. I host the Pistols Firing podcast." And he said, "Hey, Colby, very nice to meet you. Glad you're here." And this was when we were just about to score to go up 10-7, and he kind of gave a side eye to the field and then looked back at me and said, "We're looking pretty good, huh?" And I'm like, "We're pretty good." So yeah, it was good to meet Chad today. He was shaking hands, kissing babies, making the rounds. I imagine it's like the weight of the world off his shoulders to get that result today.
I thought one of the more interesting things Eric Morris had to say in his post game was about Chad Weiberg. He said Chad called him or spoke to him. I don't know if he called or just saw him in person and gave him a vote of confidence, stated that he was with him and that he hired him for a reason and that, you know, things like this can happen. But I thought it was interesting. I don't know if you could hear me, Colby. Chad Weiberg or Eric Morris referenced in his post game that him and Chad Weiberg had conversations throughout the week where Weiberg gave him a vote of confidence coming after the Tulsa loss. And I really think that did mean a lot to him. He mentioned that. And I thought Eric Morris's post game, where he got very emotional and was weeping tears actually in his post game interview, because it felt like the weight of the world was off of his shoulders because he knew how embarrassing that Tulsa loss was. He knew that is just the worst way possible to begin a new tenure somewhere, a place that doesn't know you as well. And I think you saw those emotions come out because he had Weiberg's backing and he came through and fulfilled that. He even said, I'm happy for like our alumni and students. And like, he was thinking of all the people that he had let down and his team had let down, starting with Weiberg on down to the students and alumni. And I thought that was pretty telling. I thought that he brought up Weiberg in postgame and I thought his postgame comments to ESPN were very telling as well.
Yeah, I haven't seen those yet. I'm really looking forward to going back and really watching this whole game on TV because I was field level in the end zone. So I from our angle, we could see some of the stunts and stuff, but seeing what was happening on the lines of scrimmage, I can't wait to go back and watch Morris's comments. But that's great to hear that he was emotional. And I imagine there were some hard nights this week for Chad Weiberg and Eric Morris to fall asleep. All the negativity. I was part of it. That was a train wreck last week against Tulsa. And for Eric Morris, you come in and he knows what this program means to people. As much as I have tried to gain a healthier relationship with sports as an adult, I just haven't really gotten there. Like it means a lot to me. I live and die with these results. I care deeply about what happens on that field. And Eric Morris knew the kind of place that he was coming. And he knew that he was taking over a fan base that was broken. And to have that result last week and to have the weight and the pressure of that fan base needing something to grab onto, something to give us some hope and a reason to believe that that the sun is going to shine again on Stillwater, Oklahoma. Like, I imagine it was a really long, hard week for Chad Weiberg and Eric Morris. And I cannot be happier for those guys tonight, who, you know, Chad's been around for a long time. We know his history with the university. We know he bleeds orange. And I cannot imagine a better kind of 1-2 start for Morris to feel the pain and the suffering of this fan base and then to feel the elation and how much love will pour out. You give us everything you've got and we'll give you everything we've got. It was, it's an amazing result for Eric Morris and Chad Weiberg. And I'm really happy for those guys.
Yeah, that's very well said. Thank you to Samuel for the super chat. Yeah, just amazing, amazing performance and win. And moving on through the grades here, Colby, I mean, receiver, Wyatt Young, I thought he led the way with 121 yards, 5 catches, averaged 24 yards a catch. That's like, he's not a big dude, but he was one of the bigger deep threats in the country last year. His average yards per catch was way up there at 24. Chris Barnes actually topped him at 25 yards per catch. He had 2 catches for 51 yards. Bowick had 5 for 81. Terrence Lewis, 5 for 37. Miles Coleman, 3 for 14. But 1, 2, 3, those top 4 guys all really led the way there. But I thought Wyatt Young really came through in some big spots. Obviously had the big touchdown as well, and really him alongside Nestemaker showed what they're really capable of. These are the two players we expected to come to Stillwater from day one and play the way that they did. And I thought the receivers did a good job for the most part catching the football. I think Barnes had one drop, but you watched on the other side. I thought Oregon's biggest advantage in this game was their wide receivers. And that period where they went up in the fourth quarter, the receivers were starting to get loose. I texted you. I said, this is what I was afraid of. These receivers are shifty. They're fast. They have size as well. And the defense, I thought, recovered really well from that. But Oklahoma State's receivers outplayed Oregon's. Oregon had some huge drops. I mean, we have to factor that in, too. That fourth down call was a beautiful call with the crossing route that Dakarian Moore, their electrifying receiver, who's a speedster, probably might have scored, just dropped it. I mean, it was a little high, a little over his shoulder, but he got two hands on it. But I thought the receivers played really well today, were sure-handed, and really caught some tough catches in traffic as well. I thought they did a really good job. I give them a solid A.
Yeah, I've got a lot of thoughts on the receivers. We'll start with Wyatt Young. His ability to run different routes all over the field and just be where he's needed when he's needed there, today was really an example of that. Of his 5 catches, 4 of them come to my mind immediately because they were perfect. The deep ball, obviously, the way he gets from the slot, gets up the field, and then cuts across the face of the safety to come across the field. And how many quarterbacks have we seen at Oklahoma State, whenever that receiver cuts across the field deep on that deep post, throw the ball vertical over his head and make him run back to get it, and then the defender can catch up? Nestemaker threw that ball across the field. He threw that ball north, to the north side of Lewis Field, whatever we want to call it, and let Wyatt Young run under it. There's the play up the sideline. It's just a go ball. He beats his man. It might have been a wheel, actually, from the slot. Gets up the left sideline. Nestemaker drops it in like a pillow. There was another one where Wyatt Young comes just across the middle and gets in behind a linebacker in front of a safety, understanding coverages, understanding space, the chemistry with Nestemaker to have the ball in that spot at the right moment. And then there was one where he just sat down in the middle of a zone. It was a play. I don't remember. It's all kind of a blur, but it was coming into the east end zone, and he caught it at like the 20, probably 6 yards through the air, and then he was just upfield so quickly. Morris put it on his inside shoulder so he could catch it kind of already on the move, and he caught it, and he was off like a missile for an extra 10 yards. It turns what could have been a 6, 7, 8 yard gain into a 16 or 17 yard gain. I thought he was really impressive today. Boak had a couple where he was really strong at the catch point, like guys right on him. Seeing Boak up close, Uni Heisman, I mean, 6'5", 220, and looks every bit of it.
Huge.
Oh, my God.
He's huge.
He looked so different down there at field level. He looked physically different.
On TV, when he caught the ball and started running, it looked like a baby giraffe, like just long limbs just everywhere, just all over the place. Looked like he was out of control, yet he was still in control and fighting for extra yards. He just like jumped off the screen like, whoa, who's is that Boak? Yeah, that's Boak. He's freaking huge. He's tall.
Yeah, there was one play where they stacked Boak and Miles Coleman. They had Coleman behind Boak. I think they were trying to hide him because it was in front of us, so we were looking at it from behind. And we could see above Miles Coleman, we could see like the name on the back of Justin Boak's jersey and his entire head. It was the most hilarious juxtaposition of size to have those two lined up in a stack. And you know who else impressed me today? Terrence Lewis, a couple of different times. Messemaker was rolling right and needed to find somebody, and Terrence Lewis surveyed the situation, went with Messemaker, found space, came back to the football, and gave him an outlet. He was strong at the catch point a couple of times. He was probably a little bit overlooked in the preseason. How many catches did he have today? I don't think he had big yardage. He had 5 catches for 37 yards, but I'm telling you, those 5 catches for 37 yards, they were all kind of in that like 7 to 12 yard range when you needed 7 to 12 yards. So I was really, really impressed with what we saw from the receivers today. There was one blunder, and it was early in the game when Miles Coleman did a 30-yard dead sprint back toward his own goal line on a punt return, muffed a punt into his own end zone, and then fell on it for a touchback, which is an awesome loophole in the rule to muff a fair catch at the 5, fall on it in your own end zone, and it comes out to the 20. So he got away with one there. But other than that, 0 mistakes made today by the receivers.
I thought that was a safety. I didn't realize that you could do that at first. I was like, oh, no.
As long as you don't.
3-2.
Safety, yep. Yep, good rule. And Great rule.
And poor Miles Coleman. Every time they throw him a receiver screen, nobody's blocking for him. There was a receiver screen there down near the goal line early in the game, and it's literally 2 on Coleman. I don't know what the receiver that was with him was doing. He just ran away, and the only person in the shot was Coleman and 2 Oregon Ducks who just leveled him. Poor guy cannot get a block on a receiver screen to save his life. But I will say, too, like before we go to the defense, and Morris kind of talked about this after the game. He said he's had more fourth and shorts this season than he's had in his career, which might be hyperbole. I don't know, but he said they've struggled with that. And my first real opinion I had watching the game was they might need to go to some sort of situational wildcat when it comes to 4th-and-1, 3rd-and-1, goal line situations. It reminds me a lot of that Rudolph year before they ended up going to the Walsh package with J.W. Walsh, where they were just unbelievable offense marching up and down the field between the 20s. And as soon as they got in the red zone, it got very condensed and they couldn't punch it in. And Walsh really unlocked a lot of that for them and made them a very good red zone offense. I don't want to overreact through 2 games, but if I continue to see the red zone struggles that I've seen, the short yardage struggles that I've seen, I think they need to go to a wildcat. Hell, Messemaker proved he can run it. I don't really want him being the battering ram. I'd rather use somebody else. But that's a thought I had in the first half. I don't know about you.
Yeah, I don't hate that at all. I did like today that on the 1 4th down we went for, you had a nice day. Trey Page, you look pretty shifty. You got to have Caleb Hawkins in there on the highest leverage plays of the game. And that 4th down specifically that we got, I think it was in the 4th quarter. It might have been late 3rd. But Oregon had just had a 4th down on about our 40-yard line. And we stopped them. We went and sacked Dante Moore. High leverage play in that game. And then a handful of plays later, we've got a 4th down at about Oregon's 40. And we pick it up with Caleb Hawkins up the middle. It was strong running. I really liked the way Morris coached on 4th down today. I liked having Caleb Hawkins in there in that high leverage situation. I loved the hard count they went with early in the game, got Oregon to jump off sides on a 4th down and then got a pass interference on the back end, just icing on the cake. That was one where I actually think Oklahoma State was probably not going to go for it unless they got Oregon to jump off sides. They did. They get the free 1st down. The 4th downs were handled wonderfully today. And, yeah, the short yardage stuff, Morris talked after the game about We got to get better inside the 5-yard line. Got to get better at punching those into the end zone. The kicker was nails today. Awesome. But I could stand to see a little bit less of him whenever we've got a chance to punch some of those in the end zone. A couple of those were really short field goals when we couldn't punch it in inside the 10, inside the 5. So, get one of these big one of these big athletic guys. Give them the ball and let them go wildcat. Something to use very sparingly, just here and there, and see if it works. I'm okay with experimenting with stuff like that inside the 5-yard line, especially maybe next week you can try some things against Murray State. Because, yeah, I agree. If we're nitpicking one thing from today, the best day we've had in three years, it would be let's get better inside the 5-yard line, which Coach Morris said after the game.
Yep, I think that's an area to watch. I mean, this offense has been really good through two games, at least game two. We'll have to watch it moving forward. And thank you, Derek Rain. Super chat, if the team continues to play like this the rest of the season. Carson, your prediction still stands. 10 games, still very much a possibility. I do appreciate that. I will be absolutely spiking the football on a lot of people if they win 10 games. Just mark that down. Mark that in your calendars. We got a long way to go before that happens. But you know who's going to be with us every step of the way? That would be Chris's University Spirit, your one-stop Cowboys shop. All day, every day, free standard shipping on orders over $75. I can't imagine how fired up Chris's University Spirit was today before the game. I'm sure a lot of Oregon fans were milling around there. We appreciate Chris's sponsoring this podcast as always. And we will have to get to the Chris's University Spirit uniform review. We knew the unis coming in. I thought OSU looked clean, looked sharp. Great uni matchup. You had the 1-2-1 combo from Oregon, the 1-2-1 from Oklahoma State, just the perfect symmetry there. And I did find it interesting too, Colby, that Oregon, I meant to mention this on the pregame show, they've gone away from all the snazzy, futuristic, highlighter, bedazzled uniforms, and they've gone to the straight traditional look that Oklahoma State, I feel like, kind of started going zigging the other way and zagging away from the futuristic looks. But You said Bowick would be your uniform Heisman. I think that's a good pick. I like Barnes too. I thought Barnes, every time he caught the ball, he just jumped off the screen as far as looking like just a pure ball of muscle and speed. He looked sharp as well. But I'd probably echo your sentiment on Bo. It's hard to not look cool in a single digit, yeah, being a giant like Bowick is.
Yeah, if I had to pick one on each side of the ball, I mean, Bowick just you got to go see him in person, Carson. He just he looks so much bigger than everybody else out there. Like, he's standing next to the offensive lineman and he's much closer in size to those guys than he is to the skill position players. He's incredible. And then defensively, sneaky uni Heisman, Tay Romney is looking good out there in number 3. He's flying around the field. There was a little bit of veteran leadership today from Tay Romney.
Man, he played well.
He played really well. The linebackers all played really well. I think the 3 linebackers combined for like 22, 23 tackles, something like that. And they were just filling all the gaps as the D-line was eating up offensive linemen. It was perfect, just symbiotic football on that side. I think it was Isaiah Chisholm had a tackle, third, fourth quarter, and he gets up and he gives the running back just a little extra after the play. And it was not enough to earn an unsportsmanlike conduct penalty, but he would not have had to have done much more to earn the unsportsmanlike conduct penalty. And Tate Romney walked up to him and he put his hand out and he put his hand on his chest. And you could tell it was just one of those moments like, hey, great play. Chill. Don't cost us 15 here. And that's your 25-year-old linebacker out there who's got a kid and another one on the way. You're the dad. Okay, you're the dad of the defense. Whenever something like that happens, you got to go out. You got to tell the kids to calm down and get lined back up. But yeah, Weslowski was awesome. Romney was awesome. Chisholm was awesome. Those guys were flying all around the field.
Yeah, Romney really was a standout. Thanks again, Derek Rain. I guess Matt Ryan was in the house. They had a lot of NFL people there to watch this quarterback matchup, and apparently Matt Ryan was on hand as well. Boston College guy. You always forget because he played in Atlanta so long. He actually went to school at Boston College. But my man, I mentioned this on the pregame. My man James Williams, rocking number 10, showed up early in the game. He was on screen, I think, after the first couple of plays. He had a pressure or sack or something like that very early on. I was like, yes, they're already doing what I was asking for. But let's shift to the defense, Colby. I thought my biggest takeaway through two games is this defense is far, and I mean far, better than advertised. They have really raise the floor and ceiling, I think, for what this team can be this year. There was a period in the first half, Colby, where Dante Moore, who again is a top five prospect in the NFL draft next year, could have gone last year. There was a point in the first half where Moore was 3 for 11 passing for just 17 yards. I thought this defense did exactly what they did against Tulsa. They got, what was our biggest key was turnovers, right? And you and I talked about this, and I mentioned the fourth down conversions and third down conversions. Once again, they were lights out. What was it here? I'll add it to stage here. Third and fourth downs, Oregon was 5 of 14 on third down and 0 for 3 on fourth down. I mean, this team is showing, Colby, they have a real knack for getting off the field. And that's a skill. It's a skill to get 3 and 4 straight stops. It just is. And that means you're playing sound defense. You understand the schemes. And I think if you're sitting here after two games, obviously Mestermaker was incredible. Obviously the offense played unbelievable, really, particularly in the first half. But the defense has been lights out through two games. I mean, lights out. The offense hung them out to dry against Tulsa, and the offense handed Oregon essentially two touchdowns on the two picks. It was pick six and almost a pick six. So I am blown away with what Skylar Cassidy has done through two games. Can it keep up? Who knows? But through two games, Colby, I think maybe the game ball of the season so far should probably go to Skylar Cassidy. Else the Tulsa game would have been an even bigger laugher. And Oregon did everything they could to get back in the game, and they just couldn't, thanks to the defense.
Today was an absolutely iconic performance from the Oklahoma State defense. It was you consider the two pick sixes. Oregon put 31 points on the board. That defense did not allow 31 points. That defense allowed 17 points in that game. They were right place at the right time whenever the ball was put on the ground. The football gods owed us one late in the game whenever they run the halfback toss coming out of the two-minute warning, and he puts the ball on the ground, right place at the right time. But just we've watched defenses over the last several years, the Nardo era, some of these things. Just the run defense has been terrible. Open gaps, not being filled. Defensive line gets pushed around. Linebackers are out of position. Everyone was in every right place today. It felt like every time Oregon tried to run the ball, I mean, who was their leading rusher today? 15 for 74 for De'Aaron Hill Jr. Oregon ran the ball 30 times for 90 yards, Carson. It was unbelievable. It felt like every time somebody took a carry, it was not one guy out there having to make a tackle. There were three or four Cowboys swarming to the ball, just gang tackling anybody who was brave enough to touch it. It was Oregon had 10 yards felt like a lot for Oregon. And here's the biggest compliment I can get our defense. Oregon got the ball back with 4 minutes left, all their timeouts, down by 8 points. I didn't think for a second they were going to go score. I really didn't. I did not think for a second they were going to go score. I'm like, you know what? Our defense has been pushing them back all day. We've been the better unit all day. They've been on their heels trying to figure us out, not the other way around. Four sacks. I mentioned the rep earlier by Malik Charles. That was an elite rep. Kayvon Huddleston, he had a great rep in the fourth quarter to go around and get Dante Moore on a sack. And Dante Moore saw him after the game, actually. He walked to the wrong tunnels. Then they had to send him the other way. So he walked right in front of me. And, I hollered at him and said, you'll bounce back, Dante. You're awesome, man. Something like that. And he kind of gave a nod, but he was so dejected. He had his helmet up, but his head was down. And he looked exhausted. He looked dejected. I mean, he looked like his whole world had just come crashing down around him. And that whole world that came crashing down around him, that was Malik Charles and Kayvon Huddleston and Jaleel Johnson and Weslowski and those guys. Like, it was well-timed blitzes. How about the play where Chisholm and Romney showed in the gaps, and then Romney knew exactly where the ball was going, fell out of his gap, sprinted to his left, undercut the curl, and almost picked it. Like, that is smarts. That's good coaching. That's good instincts. I'm really bullish on what this defense could be. Like, the power four talent that we brought over is there. The schemes are there. The coaching is there. I mean, we were a much better unit. The statement I'm about to say out loud with confidence, the Oklahoma State defense was a much better unit today than the Oregon offense. It wasn't close.
Yeah, I mean, it's really remarkable how well they've played through two games, and I'm glad Wet Blanket called it out. Jameel Johnson had a huge sack, redemption for him. Yeah. After that boneheaded penalty he had against Tulsa, huge play by him. And I thought LaDainian Fields, like, look, he got cooked on that fourth down, was well behind the play and talked a little trash. I hated to see that when the guy just drops it, you were burnt toast. but he had a couple really good plays. He had a huge pass breakup late in that game. I think it was a third down, kind of deep toward their own end zone, to OSU's end zone. I thought he played really well. Wesloski led the way with 9 total tackles, 2 solo. Quentin Hammonds, Tate Romney, Isaiah Chisholm, like you mentioned, LaDainian Fields, and really just this defense doesn't have a superstar, and that's okay. That's fine. Some of OSU's better defenses have been, you know, just the sum is greater than the parts. So I think that's what we're going to see here. It's not going to be some, they're not going to have a bunch of first team all Big 12 guys, and that's okay, because what they do is they play sound football. They don't make a bunch of massive mistakes, and they get off the field when it matters. Like, nothing else really matters. Like, it doesn't matter how many yards you give up. It matters if you can take the football and put it back in your offense's hands. And that's what they did. And they actually held Oregon to 101 total yards in the first half. That is just hats off to Skylar Cassidy. I really liked the hire based on what he did at Sam Houston, and they plucked him and put him at North Texas and what he did there. And through 2 games, he's replicating that success at Oklahoma State. I think that, again, is one of my bigger, not takeaways, but almost surprises, pleasant surprises of the season, is that, you know, Cassidy's already, you know, paying off dividends with what he's been able to do defensively. Again, they'll have to keep proving it week in, week out. But, man, you're not going to play an offense as talented as Oregon the rest of the way, really.
No, that was as good as you're going to see. I will not stand for any belittling of Oregon as a way to explain this game. They're a really good team. I think there's still every chance that they win 10 or 11 games. They're good enough they could run the table. I'm telling you that the Oklahoma Heat, it hits different, Carson. These people, I mean, we were in an elevator at one point with those Oregon people, and they were like, we're about to die. How do y'all do this? It hits different.
And it was cooler than it's been. It wasn't even 104. It's been like 104, 105 all week, the last 2 weeks. This was easy work.
It rained right before the game, and it was humid, dude. We were cooking in the sun.
I'm sure.
But it's where'd the comment? We had a good comment over. Oh, yeah, right here. From David says, well, we now have 91 new players that their blood has turned orange. We needed that result today. We didn't just need to compete against Oregon, because you compete against Oregon and you lose a heartbreaker, and it feels a lot different. You don't have that wind under your sails. You win that game, those fans storm the field the way they did. You get to take part in that party, in that celebration. The goalpost came literally right over our heads. We ducked under the goalpost on the field as they were carrying it out, took that thing to Theta Pond and went swimming with it. Like, that, those are the things that you feel as one of these new guys in Stillwater, and you feel it. We've said this for years, Carson. We can't exactly describe what it is to be a part of this community and what it is to be a part of just this Oklahoma State family. But when you feel it, you know. And those guys who haven't ever felt it before, they felt it today.
No question. I had it up a second ago. Our friend Derek, or Dark Rain, asked, potential for the defense to be better than 2021. Let's not go too far. The 2021 defense was like the steel curtain. I mean, Texas Tech, I don't think, crossed midfield for an entire game against that defense. And we had the best obviously defense. Won the Fiesta Bowl.
We had the best defense in the country in 21. I think we had a better defense than Georgia and Michigan that year. We were – yeah, I'm not really there, but this –
Devin Harper, my God.
Devin Harper.
Devin Rodriguez just killing people.
I still think we just need to have a guy's name and dude segment.
Yeah, we could do that. I could name a lot of dudes over the years. I'm a lot older than you.
A name that came to
everyone
mind.
That's with us. We've got over 400 people in this live stream here. We appreciate you guys. It's been a long, long, long 2 seasons. We appreciate a lot of you are familiar faces, familiar names. You've been with us throughout. We can't thank you enough. Start firing off your questions. We'll get to those. But first, Colby, I think we need to hear from our partners at Echo. I think they lifted the curse of the offensive line. Echo Contracting put out a tweet. I wish I had it, could put it in the show here. I'm not going to be able to tech lord all that right now, but they hit a golf ball, one of the Pro V1s that went unused last week in the score prediction challenge. They wanted to lift the curse of Joe Wickline and that the fact that the offensive line has been in shambles ever since he left. And they launched one of those Pro V1s into the pond there at Karsten Creek. And I think they lifted the curse. The offensive line played lights out, 0 sacks, 1 tackle for loss. Looked like vintage Joe Wickline offensive line. So shout out to our friends at Echo Contracting for sponsoring the show, doing their giveaway. We'll have to see who won the Pro V1 contest this week. But the curse is lifted, my friend.
Yeah, I had the Pro V1 contest up over here just a second ago. It was Vinay Patel. Vinay Patel, he tweeted, and he said 38, 34 pokes, really close in score prediction. And then in parentheses, he said, this is a leverage play, honesty. That's great. Leverage yourself against the field. Vinay Patel was the winner of that. So congrats to Vinay. That's awesome. Great prediction. Really great prediction. Yeah, Echo Contracting. Yeah, those guys are awesome. So you'll have a box of Echo branded Pro V1s coming your way. Should remind everyone, Echo Contracting offers electrical contracting services throughout all of Oklahoma. They pride themselves on high quality professional jobs done right the first time. Call or text for a quote today, 405-279-8444, or email info@echo-contracting.com. Yeah, and it was great to go hang out with them today, and just the vibes were immaculate all day long, really, because this was not a game, Carson, where it was like we were hanging on for dear life against a superior opponent and hoping we could pull it out in the end. Like, first quarter goes through, we start getting into the second quarter, and it's 17-7, and their only score is a pick six. It really started to feel like I think we're the better team. Like, I had watched a quarter and a half of that football game, and I'm like, there's one side out there that is getting dominated, and we're doing the dominating. And yeah, so the spirits were high all day. The vibes were immaculate. They took the lead there at, 30-28 maybe? And or whatever it was, 31, I don't remember what it was. They took the lead in the third, fourth quarter, and it got a little tense for a while. But we had the answer. It's like every time Oregon tried to do something to get the momentum back, we had the answer. The pick six happens early in the game. What does Oklahoma State do? Answers. You get the other one. You're up 17-7. You're dominating the game. They get another pick, puts them at the 1 yard line for a touchdown. 17-14. What does Oklahoma State do? Answers. Goes back up by 10. All day long, Oregon just tried and tried and tried to get over the hump, and Oklahoma State had the answer every single time. It was a day, Carson. It was a day. Man, I can't imagine Dan Lanning and those Oregon guys on the plane on their way back. They've got to be feeling sick. 74-point turnaround. That thought just popped into my head, too. They beat us by 66 last year. We beat them by 8 this year. 74-point turnaround. We talk about respecting your opponent, Carson. I don't think we respected our opponent when we went into Chapman Stadium last week. I don't know if all those guys who came back, who were on that Oregon team last year, they came and played against the same laundry, and it was a whole bunch of different people, and I think they were shocked at what they found whenever they got to Stillwater today.
Well, they watched the Tulsa film. I mean, yeah. You wouldn't be overconfident coming to Stillwater on a team you already beat by 60-plus, watching them lose to Tulsa. Like, that's just human nature. And I really did think the second pick, the deflection that goes behind Mestemaker, lands in the breadbasket. Like, Oklahoma State was up 17-7, and I was starting to feel really confident right then. And that happens, and I think I tweeted, we just cannot have nice things. It felt like Squinky was back. Squinky, we're still paying for 2023 Bedlam. It just felt like everything was going to unravel at that point. But again, I think just the level of play down after down after down on offense and defense didn't allow that to happen. I think that's just testament to Eric Morris, who, again, had a lot of questions to answer, and he answered all of them. And so I thought there was a good question here from Jesse Meeks. He says, do y'all's season predictions change now? I mean, Colby, you were much less optimistic than I was. I think you had him at like 5 wins. I think I said 7 or 8. I think I said 7, but I was just, and can I, hang on 1 second. Can I be a little truthful with everyone in this live stream right now?
This is a safe space.
I really, really deep down in my soul thought OSU was going to play really well in this game. I didn't think, after what I watched against Tulsa, I didn't think they were going to win. But I, in my heart of hearts, I really thought Oklahoma State was going to play this game really tight and really well and score a bunch of points. I couldn't come out and say that because they made me look so freaking stupid through one game. But yeah. I swear, Colby, that's why I said the things I said in our post game against Tulsa. That's why I tweeted, like, is OSU going to look this bad the rest of the year? Probably not. Is their offensive line going to get much better? Probably not. They did somehow. But that game against Tulsa was so situational. You saw that with Oregon today. They couldn't deliver on the money down. Situational football failed Oregon today. It failed Oklahoma State against Tulsa. That doesn't mean that they're a 5-7 horrible football team like they've been the last 2 years. That's why I had optimism coming out of that game. And if I really was being truthful, but my pride couldn't take another beating like it had against Tulsa, So I had to come out and be a little bit more reasonable and predict Oregon to win in a blowout. But in my heart of hearts, Colby, I thought OSU was going to keep this game close. I'm winning the game in the preseason. So everything that I thought I was going to see this year bore itself out today.
This is the team that we were promised. This is the offense that we were promised. This is an over-deliver from the defense. And, yeah, I've been in that situation too where, like, you kind of have a gut feeling, but you've already been made to look like a fool being on one side, so you can't just go out on that limb again. Otherwise, it's like, okay, who is this guy just doubling down with his orange glasses on? I totally get the position you were in. And now we're kind of put back in this position where, I mean – everybody kind of had them starting 1-1. But before the season, you had them winning 10. I had them winning 8. They lose to Tulsa last week in just pretty pathetic fashion, putting up 10 points against Tulsa.
Dominated.
Throwing up on the sidelines. It was the play calling was a disaster. No creativity whatsoever. So after that game, I think I maybe came down to 5 and you maybe came down to 7. So we each took like 3 wins away from them from our preseason predictions after what we saw against Tulsa.
Hey, you can recalibrate after today, man. No one's going to hold you to that.
No, I mean, we're processing new information as we get it. Before the season, we were working with assumptions. We got some information against Tulsa. We panicked. And now we've gotten some more information after this game against Oregon. I'm ready to burn the Tulsa tape. I feel good, Carson. Again, my adrenaline's still going. I got home like 45 minutes before we turned the mics on tonight. Like I've barely even had time to process what we watched in Boone Pickens Stadium. I'm gonna have to go back and watch it on TV to see what was happening in the trenches. My only thing is, I want to see them prove it to me on the road in big spots whenever they don't have that incredible crowd and incredible home field advantage. You still have to go to Arizona State. You still have to go to Kansas State. You still have to go to Iowa State, who, shout out Jimmy Rogers, man, middle of the third quarter right now. Iowa State's beating Iowa 13-10. Iowa State's 2-touchdown underdogs in that game. Iowa State looked pretty good in week 1, too. So shout out to Jimmy Rogers doing some good coaching up there. So
that's going to be a tough game.
It's going to be a tough game.
Their names.
It's going to be a tough game. Halloween, please, 11 o'clock kickoff. Please, 11 o'clock kickoff. Don't make us play.
Let's not write in 10 wins just yet.
On Halloween. So the road games are what scare me, and the road games, seeing it at West Virginia, I think if they're going to steamroll Murray State. If they go into West Virginia and beat West Virginia 45-21, I'll be ready to get unreasonable and start talking about a double-digit win season and contending for the Big 12 title. Texas Tech right now, they were tied with Oregon State most of the first half, scored late in the first half. They're up 14-7 right now at Oregon State at halftime. Texas Tech was pretty unimpressive last week in their opening game against a cupcake East Washington State or whoever it was. The drum that I beat coming into the season when I picked Oklahoma State to beat Texas Tech is that vibes were weird down there. They lost a lot of talent. They lost a quarterback to DraftKings. Like, they just – vibes are weird down there. The Big 12 is there for the taking, Carson. So let me see it at West Virginia. And then we will have 2 weeks, if they drum West Virginia, to sit here and talk about what could be over the next 8 games. I just want to see it on the road, and then I'll feel really, really good.
No, it's a really good point because, as you were talking about, like, winning on the road is obviously difficult. We all know this. And I was reminded, like, do you remember, Colby, were you old enough to remember? Like, I was working at the Ocali in Stillwater when Mike Gundy, for his first season, his first three years, I want to say, he could not win a road game. That was like the number one storyline of Mike Gundy's first 3 years of his tenure, was really good at home, fun offense, go on the road, complete kaput. I mean, face plant. The offense would just face plant on the road. I remember going down to A&M. They had like a blocked punt late in that game. So it's hard for a new coach in this conference to win on the road. We'll have to see if Morris can navigate that, because he failed that first test miserably against Tulsa, in which you had as many fans as Tulsa, by the way.
Yeah.
It was very much a neutral to home crowd. So no, that's a very good point. And I just, like, you just brought it up, man. Like, Tech is not the Tech we saw last year, both defensively and offensively. This league, as you said, is ripe for the picking. And I see this offense lighting up this league. I just do. But you're right. They have to prove it. They have to do it on the road. They failed that test miserably. And until they do that in Morgantown, I think we do have to temper our 9-10 win expectations for now. But I will say, again, they don't play three of the best four defenses in the entire league. They're going to be lighting up the dregs of the league defensively. Like, what is Mestemaker, what are they going to be doing at home against this conference schedule? It's going to be a lot of fun to watch.
Yeah, we're going to, I mean, UCF coming to Boone Pickens Stadium, we're going to put them in a rocket and launch them back to the moon. Like, that's, I hope they're wearing their Space Cadet uniforms when they come to Stillwater, because we're putting
that. This is going to be fun, man. This is going to be vintage Oklahoma State, where we just put up 40 and 50 points. I you remember all my predictions. I had them scoring more than 40 more often than not.
Yeah,
you did. And they almost got there against Oregon. Probably should have in a lot of ways. But yeah. You put this question up?
Yeah, I thought this was a great question from at Depressed Poke. You got to change your name after today. At what point today did y'all feel like we would / could win the game? I felt like we could win the game when we went up 17-7. And their only points were from a pick six. And I'm like, we're dominating both sides of the ball, but there's a lot of game left. Maybe their talent comes through. I felt like we would win the game when the field goal went through the uprights to make it 39-31. Because at that point, you're up by eight, and there's plenty of time left in that game. But I felt really confident. Sam Keltner, by the way, I keep saying the kicker. I needed to go look up his name. He was nails today. Sam Keltner, take a
nails.
Bow. A+.
Yes.
A+. The 44-yarder, by the way, after the face mask call on a day, which I it was hard to see from where we were at. It looked like from our end, it should have been offsetting face mask penalties. J-Rod, the missed face mask call. Discuss. On TV, Carson, did that look like it was just a defensive face mask? Did it look like they both got in the face mask and it should have been offsetting? We didn't have a very good view.
It was – I'm going to try to mute myself here. That was a horse call. Absolute horse. Did that work? You didn't hear it?
Yeah, that was perfect.
Good.
That was perfect.
For the children, for the kids. It was a bunch of – you know what? I mean, it was a typical football play where both guys are fighting. If anything, it was defensive face mask. You never, ever, ever see, unless it's egregious and his hand gets stuck in the defender's face mask for a 1 second, 2 second, maybe even 3 second count, you can throw that flag. It was Eric Morris rightfully lost his mind. I mean, he got penalized. The flag actually hit him in the back. I thought like he might get pissed because the flag hit him.
Okay.
I thought Morris hurt the team with that flag, but I couldn't blame him for it.
So we didn't know what the flag was because we couldn't hear the announcements, and we're all the way down at the East End, so we can't see what Morris is doing. So after the face mask, he lost his mind, and that's why we kicked off from the 20?
Yeah, that's why. He went on the field, got in the guy's face, instant flag. He must have said all sorts of things to him that only, you know, Eric Morris could recite, but like, I think this comment here from JRO218, 100% offsetting. That, at worst, in my opinion, offsetting. Because, like, did we touch his face mask? Yeah. Did he grab it and pull it down? No. Like, it was incidental contact in my eyes. And if anything, I think it was a defensive face mask or, at the absolute worst case, offsetting. The fact that it was only on the offense was insane. It was one of the worst calls of the day, I thought, of all the football I watched.
Okay, yeah, that's good to know because we did not have a very good look at it. Aside from that call, there are people in the comments saying the ball was spotted poorly. I don't have much to say about that from where I was watching the game, the angle I was watching the game. I thought for the most part they let them play. They let defensive backs play with receivers. You know, like you said, LaDainian Fields had a couple of times where his timing was just perfect. And sometimes you can get a laundry happy ref that throws a flag on those and just makes you sick to your stomach. And I didn't think we had too much of that today. So I like the way that they let them play there. There wasn't a lot of holding being called. There was one here and there. Oregon got one. I don't know. Did we have a single holding call today? How about that? No sacks. One tackle for loss given up to Oregon. I don't think we had a single holding call today. So, the ball being spotted, whatever. I'll have to watch that back on TV. The face mask, I'm taking everybody's word, was an obvious miss. But in general, I liked the way they let the two teams play. And, yeah, I just clocked that we didn't have a holding penalty today, which is mystifying. We always have holding penalties. We are riddled with holding penalties.
I'll answer that question. Like, I thought OSU could win when they scored the touchdown to go up 24-14. Because when that second pick happened, making it 14-17, I was just like, I've seen this movie 1,000 times. We cannot have nice things. Squinky's back. But when they really answered immediately to go up 10 and held Oregon to a field goal to be up 7 at halftime, the yardage was what it was. That's when I was like, okay, going to the second half, OSU can absolutely win this game. And I didn't think they were going to, obviously, until it's probably the same point you did when they made it 39.
Yeah, up by 8. And again, this goes back to the confidence I had in the defense. I never thought Oregon was going to be able to drive down and score and get the 2-point conversion. Like, it just, it felt like a big ask for an offense that had been getting pretty thoroughly dominated by our defense all day. And it was a big ask. And, you know, Oregon came out and they tried to be really patient at the start of that drive. You know, I think that they were trying to play the chess game of, all right, Oklahoma State is going to think that we're going to come out and air it out and try and just rip big throws down the field. So we're just going to run the ball a few times to set all that up. And they got cute on the toss. The ball hit the ground and right spot, right time. That was a big turnover, Carson. It's just, we've needed a break. We've needed a break for a while. And, you know, a running back dropping the ball on a halfback toss because he's trying to get upfield, and us being there and being Johnny on the spot. Was it Tate Romney that fell on it? I can't remember now, because I started bouncing around like a maniac whenever it happened and stopped looking at the field, and everybody was hugging and going crazy. And but yeah, right place, right time. Football gods owed us one. Die, Squinky, die. It was the curse was lifted. The curse was lifted today.
Yeah, I don't have fumble recoveries here on ESPN's box score, but fire off more questions. We'll get out of here soon. Appreciate everyone joining us. This is from Letters and Numbers. What a game. Erased the Tulsa game from memory. Coach Morris showed he can rebound. The future is bright. And OU still sucks always and forever. And I had to, I don't know if anyone in this chat follows me on Twitter. I had to clap back a little bit on George Stoya, who I like a lot. I'm friends with the Sooner Scoop guys. Me and Eddie Radosovich go back a long, long ways. And I really enjoy their podcast. I still listen to the Sooner Scoop pod to kind of still have a feel for OU. My wife's an OU grad, so I can't avoid it. And he tweeted after OSU lost, down goes the next Indiana. And so I had to quote tweet and said, down goes the next Iowa with their pathetic offense they have, with scoring 10 points against a hapless Michigan team that should have lost to Western Michigan. So I
lose the Western Michigan.
It's all coming up OSU this Saturday. It might go right back to the universe we existed in last week. But for now, clap back on all your Sooner friends, because it's time.
Yeah, correction. The fumble recovery I'm being told in the chat was James Williams. So, like I said, I turned around, started giving hugs and high fives and going crazy as soon as that happened. So I was not dialed in on who jumped on it. So right place, right time. Good on him. We just, that line made every right play all day long. And yeah, the OU loss today, just icing on the cake. We had it down. We had it on down there and we were watching it, and it was, I mean, it's icing on the cake. It's, if we're ranking teams in the state of Oklahoma today, last week the rankings would have gone OU 1, Tulsa 2, Oklahoma State 3. If we're ranking, I have to see if Tulsa beat Sam Houston. Tulsa was struggling with Sam Houston at one point. So if Tulsa beats Sam Houston today, we still have to give them number one based on resume, not based on talent, not based where you think they're going to go. If Tulsa wins, they're up 23-17 on Sam Houston right now, road game. So if Tulsa wins today, they can stay number one in the state power rankings for a week. But that would have us slotted in at 2 and OU a distant third after a win over hapless UTEP. And then, I mean, home road is different, Carson. Home road is different. I get that. It's the big house. I get that. Western Michigan went into the big house and won last week. As somebody who's on the wrong side of the Central Michigan game, like, I'm not recognizing that as a Michigan win. I'm just not going to do it. I'm going to just talk about it the way it happened, which was that Western Michigan won the game. And then OU went up there today. And, Carson, do you remember there was a time when you and I both really wanted Ben Arbuckle to come be the offensive coordinator at Oklahoma State? Woo! Bullet dodged. Bullet dodged. Kirk Ferentz would be proud of the way the OU Sooners play football. Your tweet to George, I mean, I about fell over laughing whenever you said down goes the next Iowa, because that's just like the most amazing, gentle, backhanded insult you could possibly give. And yeah, I mean, they're the SEC's Iowa, except in the SEC, Iowa doesn't win 10. In the SEC, Iowa wins 7. And that's the reality for OU fans right now. And
they got Georgia next, by the way.
That'll be fun. That's who they've got next. That's brutal.
I think they maybe they have a game in between, but I think they play Georgia next. That's they have 2 weeks to get ready for Georgia. I think they have a cream puff next, probably.
But Carson, they get a big check from their conference. They get a big check from their conference, so it's worth it, right? It's worth it to be
well
in college football if you get a big check from your conference.
They look like Iowa because their $3 million quarterback stinks. Like John Mateer wanted to blame this thumb injury for a year and a half. That was why he sucked, but he still stinks and couldn't throw the football against Michigan. Let me see their schedule here. And I don't think Ben Arbuckle's being allowed to run his offense, by the way. I think we have a Mike Yurcich, Dana Holgorsen situation where Gundy's taking the sticks. I think Venables has got his mouth where it doesn't belong. Yeah, they play New Mexico at home.
Okay.
New Mexico, I think, is not terrible. I don't think they're just horrific. Let me see if I can pull it up here. New Mexico only lost three games last year in the regular season, so they're not a cream puff. And then they play Georgia, so good luck to them. But
are they at Georgia? Or is that
Arbuckle's running his offense.
Are they at Georgia or is that a home game?
Oh, dang it.
I think they're at Georgia. If I remember right, I think that was a road game. But yeah, OU's offense has just looked totally anemic. They're a one-sided football team. That is
at Georgia, then Texas at the neutral site.
Texas, you can make a lot of money fading Carson and I's locks. Texas is getting just boat raced by Ohio State right now at home.
I'm 0-2 thanks to the Sooners. You know,
yeah, so I'm 0-2.
My locks have not been good.
I'm 0-2 thanks.
I probably should put more than like 30 seconds of thought into it as well. I forgot my lock this week and just came with OU.
I did research week one and thought Miami might struggle to fly across the country. What I didn't factor in is that Miami might be an NFL team and Malachi Toney's a freak of nature. And they put up almost 900 yards of offense the other night against Florida A&M, broke all the school records. I'm like, oh, okay. So that Miami team that went to the national championship last year got better. Good for them. That's fun. That was so fun. Like whenever we talk about OU and we talk about that's just a one-sided football team. They're going to have to win games 13-10 and 21-17. Like, that is what you should be so fired up about today as an Oklahoma State fan is the complimentary football and the fact that I think this team can win games a lot of different ways because I think they're good on both sides, good kicker, solid in the special team. So, yeah, I was really, really impressed with what Oklahoma State put on the field today. Also, really, really impressed with the people at Farm Service Company. Farm Service Company is a real estate brokerage spanning three generations of Oklahoma State graduates in Chickasha, Oklahoma. They offer farm management for non-resident landowners, farm and ranch appraisal, and farm and ranch sales. Check out farmservicerealestate.com for more information. Love all of our good sponsors, Chris's University Spirit, Echo Contracting, and Farm Service Company, and glad that they are all on with us for what we're hoping is going to be a magical season. It was a magical day, Carson. Any thoughts on that? Like what I was saying before before the break there, like the ability to play complimentary football, the ability throughout a three-month season where you're going to deal with injuries and things on both sides and adversity. And I think that we could see different games pop up over these next 10, 11, 12, however many we end up playing. I think we could see different scenarios pop up where some days you need your offense to go win you a game. Some days you need your defense to go win you a game. It doesn't always have to be the same unit. There's not this glaring weak link on one side of the ball. And, man, that's a good feeling walking out of that stadium today.
Yeah, I mean, I've covered and watched a lot of OSU teams where the offense knew they had to score every time they had the ball because they knew the defense was not going to hold up their end of the bargain. And 2021, the OSU defense knew they had to get every stop because, you know, Spencer Sanders was beat up. The offense stunk that year. Can't believe they went as far as they did with how poor the offensive game plans were. So, no, I do think they're – like, that to me is the biggest thing moving forward. It was unbelievable to see the offense we were promised and we all expected. But it's been an unbelievably pleasant surprise to see a defense play as well. Oregon averaged 3.2 yards per play in the first half. Now, they did average 8.6 in the second half, so we do have to temper some of our expectations for this defense being, you know, as good as we may think they might be. But – I think that is something that you and I, we talked a lot about this season in the lead up. You and I did not expect the defense to be this good through two games. We just didn't. I don't think anybody did. I mean, maybe Eric Morris and Skylar Cassidy did, but the success, he is replicating the same success he had from Sam Houston that he did in North Texas. He's now doing it at OSU. And I want to echo what you said earlier too, Colby. OSU fans needed this. I mean, 18 straight winning seasons. then the last two being the worst team in the entire country. And you haven't seen the support just go to embarrassing levels like we've seen at USC, for instance. This fan base needed a reason to believe. That was the number one thing I wanted to see on Saturday today was don't get run out of the stadium. Give the fans a reason to be invested and stay and really start to believe in this new regime. And boy, that obviously surpassed any expectation because I think we all had dreams of what Eric Morris could be as the OSU coach. It just seemed like a perfect match, perfect style, seems like a Stillwater guy, brings in this quarterback who he's groomed himself. All of the hope and expectations we had came to fruition today against Oregon. Everything we kind of hoped it would look like, it was even better when you consider how well the defense played. So I think that I don't look as silly picking them to win 10 games after what I just saw. I'll just put it that way.
And to go back to what you were saying about our fan base, everyone who made the trip to Stillwater today, give yourselves a pat on the back. You played a part in the outcome of that game. And Carson, to pack the stadium like that, to have that crowd on deck, you've lost 21 FBS games in a row. You talk about what's happened with USC, what happens in some of these other places where you go down in the dumps and people stop coming until you prove it to them. Oklahoma State fans, yes, there was a lot of hype in the offseason. A lot of these tickets to the Oregon game today were bought before what happened against Tulsa last week. But 21 straight losses to FBS opponents. You lose 24-10 to Tulsa last week. There was an hour and a half rain delay today. It was 100 degrees. It was 105 in the stadium. It was 150 on the turf. It was uncomfortable. It was hot. It was humid. We were 24-point dogs, and there was not an empty seat in the place. There was not an empty seat in the house. Everyone was standing the whole game. Everyone was screaming the whole game. It was deafening. It's special to be a part of the OSU family, the OSU community. It's special. And this fan base deserves a ton of credit for showing up, knowing that that they could be a part of the result. And they were. They were a big, big part of the result today.
Yeah, I mean, again, I've been to a lot of stadiums throughout the country. I've been to Ohio State. I've been to Florida State. I've been to OU, Texas. I've been in the Rose Bowl for Georgia, Oklahoma. I've been a lot of big places that are on like the kind of the bucket list. And I think Oklahoma State's home crowd is as tough of an environment as you can face. I've been to Georgia when OSU played at Georgia. I've been to a lot of places that you would kind of set the bar at. And OSU has risen to a place where it is that difficult. And I think the stats I listed at the beginning of the show bear that out. They're, 8-4, their last, you know, last 12 top 10 matchups there in Stillwater. I think that speaks for itself. But a really good question here from Mike Fornes. Where does Mestemaker's first home start rank among quarterback performances you've watched at Boone Pickens Stadium? And, boy, we've seen a lot through Whedon, Rudolph, Corndog had a really good game against Texas and, I believe, West Virginia at home. Spencer Sanders has had some unbelievable performances there. I think you got to put this right up there when you consider the fact he ran for 100 yards and threw for over 300 and really put the team on his back after really falling on their faces in week one. This was not just the Caleb Hawkins show. It was the Drew Mestemaker show. And he delivered and more. I would put it right up there with any of those names I listed.
Yeah, iconic. Carson, we're going to be 60 years old, and we're going to be talking about this win against Oregon. Just the context of the ending of the Gundy era, the beginning of the Morris era, what happened last week, and then to do this, like, this game is going – this is one of those games that gets embedded in the soul of a fan base. I think that this game's going to be remembered for a long, long time for what he did through the air, what he did on the ground, what he did just being a gamer, going up over the top, taking the shot to the ribs. Shout out to 15 for Oregon, too. He was not okay after that play. It happened really fast. I think he was coming in to try to make the tackle. Next thing he knew, Mestemaker's up over his head. It was a weird hit, and then he wasn't able to brace himself going to the ground. When he tried to stand up and walk off with the people holding him, his legs like wobbled and gave, and they had to go again. So I'm really hoping that 15 for Oregon is okay. That was a really tough injury. So Mestemaker after the game said, just talking about the moment after the game, the chaos, the just the whole day, said, I think it exceeded every expectation I had. Honestly, that's like the best moment of my life, honestly, and to have the fans behind us, it was just unreal the whole game. Best moment of his life, he calls it. It's just you gave us a great moment, Drew. We've needed this, Carson. We needed this. We've been hanging on by a thread. All of us, we've been hanging on by a thread. I mean, I've even thought, you know, these days are long. These days are long, and now hauling a kid to Stillwater in this heat, paying for concessions, parking, gas is $4 a gallon. Like, I've even thought, like, is it worth it? Like, if we're going to be bad, is it worth it? And I'm telling you, we needed this. I needed this. We needed this, and we got it. Thank you, Eric Morris. Thank you, Drew Mestemaker. Thank you, everyone else who played a role in that result today. We needed it. OSU Tuba, you threw this up on the screen. Ranking after this win, in, out, or close to the top 25, the voters will not allow themselves to get carried away after the loss against Tulsa, but I think we sneak in. I'm going to predict that we are the 25th ranked team in the country after this week, which is basically the voters saying, let's pause and give Oklahoma State a few more weeks to show some things to us, and then we can move them up further if what we saw against Oregon was real.
Wouldn't it be the most OSU thing ever, though, if they're not? Like, I think there's going to be real Oregon backlash. I've already seen it somewhat from the national people just ripping Oregon, like the guy you mentioned, Schwartz, and everyone thinks they're terrible now. And I just think that they don't really realize the talent level OSU had, just because they just looked at the box score of what happened against Tulsa. They don't really understand the firepower that they have and what Oregon had to deal with, because Oregon was walking into a really tough spot, a team that's pissed off. They got yelled at all week for embarrassing themselves against Tulsa with a crowd that just was just dying for something to cheer for. Bullitt was just chomping at the bit to start running, and they walked into a hornet's nest, and that can happen. But I think I'm hopeful they'll be 25, 24, 23, somewhere in there, but I they'll probably still be unranked. I think people will probably want to, kind of what you talked about, maybe a wait-and-see approach once Big 12 play starts.
Yeah, I think people are just going to want to see more, because at this point, I mean, in 2 weeks, we've seen the floor and the ceiling of this team. So, I mean, which do you choose to go with? Obviously, I know which one I'm choosing to go with. I've got Pistol Pete on my shirt. You know where my thoughts lie. I don't try to hide that. But, I think that this is – I mean, what we just watched today at Boone Pickens Stadium was one of the top 25 teams in the country. Could be one of the better teams in the country. We'll see by the end of the season. I just, again, burn the Tulsa tape. Burn it. It was game one. They were nervous. They played terrible. Everything that could go wrong went wrong. Their left tackle broke his leg six plays in. It's burn it. Burn the tape. We don't ever have to talk about it again.
Put it up on the shelf of mystery. You've got South Alabama there. You've got, was it 56-0 up there in Manhattan when Spencer Sanders and them were undefeated?
48-0 maybe, but yeah.
48-0. That's up there on the shelf of mystery. We're going to put that up with the
Iowa State.
The South Alabama and stuff. What's that?
2011 Iowa State shelf of mystery, just that whole day.
Right, that's the centerpiece of the shelf. Yeah. That one right there. That's a good call out. It goes into the South Alabama Hall of Fame on the shelf of mystery. So we'll have to see. But appreciate everyone joining us. We got 400 people still in here live. We really appreciate that. And I'm running out of juice. I don't have my charger in here, Colby. I got about 30 minutes left of battery, but I don't know if we want to hang on that long. It's pretty late. Fire off your questions.
We're previewing Murray State next week, so the Murray State preview pod is probably going to be a lot more recapping of the Oregon game, of the quotes throughout the week, of the way this was covered by the local and the national media. We'll get all that Thursday whenever we come in here. Oregon State. We will have a lot more to say about this Oregon game on Thursday when we preview Murray State. We'll have way more to say about this Oregon game than we will to preview about the Murray State game. I'm really looking forward to seeing what the conversation around this game is. And Carson, I was begging for this team to get to the bye week at 2-2. Just go beat West Murray State and West Virginia and get to the bye week at 2-2. And now the thoughts of being 3-1 at the bye, getting off to a 1-0 start in conference play, like I'm really ready to be fully back on board. And yeah, today was awesome, man. It was awesome. Our listeners are awesome. Shout out. I met several listeners today at the stadium. People stopped me walking down the concourse. Gosh, I want to say Tyler was his name, and Molly. Another guy was there and introduced themselves. They were great. And then on the field after the game, we were just fixing to leave, and I was like, Colby! And I looked over and they were like, Colby, man, it's you from the pod. They're like, can we get a picture? And it was Caleb and Zach I met on the field. So tag me in that picture. Put it on Twitter. I love meeting the listeners. And next weekend, I should be back in section 120 in the West End Zone if anybody wants to come say hi. I know a couple of people are saying they'll be there next weekend for family day. So, yeah, come say hi. It should be only good vibes next week against Murray State.
I've got to get up to Stillwater. I got to get up to the Echo Contracting Suite. I will do that at some point this year. I got to pick my spots. Got to pick my battles. But again, I was remiss. So my wife Sydney, she's not an interior decorator by trade, but she has an unbelievable eye for style, and she helped design this backdrop you see here. I failed to mention that on the last pod, and I failed her in that, and she came up with the lamps. Yeah, I've always had this credential thing you see back here. This was my 10-year anniversary present from Channel 5 when I was there, all my favorite credentials. Colby's getting his Barry Sanders, but my wife, Sydney, shout out to her. Her interior design did this, not me. What do you got there, Colby?
Wonderful. Well, I said on Thursday, I said, when they win a game, I'll bring Barry into the shot. I forgot about it because we got home right before we took off the bus. This was on the other wall. I'm bringing it in now, and I'll make sure it ends up somewhere right back here behind me. Where do we need to be? About right there.
I can see your screen now.
Reflection. So, yeah, I've got multiple screens going. I've got lights going. I've got everything going. So I'll have to figure that all out. But yeah, we'll get some Oklahoma State stuff here in the bag. Yeah, your setup looks really sharp now with the helmet, the ball, the credentials. A+.
And I got a little, you can't probably see, there's Des Bryant bobblehead over my left shoulder.
Nice. Yeah.
And there's a picture of me and Sydney. You have to zoom in if you want to see what a babe I'm married to through that board on a Saturday night. I'm getting off the rails here, Colby. But final thoughts from me, Colby. I think I need to get back to Sydney and the girls. They're probably wondering where I am. But I can't state this enough. I love and appreciate everyone who's still on here, all 413 of you. Again, it's been a long road to hoe the last 2 years. Never did I dream when I started doing this podcast in 2015 that Oklahoma State would be the worst team in the country back-to-back seasons. That wasn't on my bingo card. I'm sure it was not on yours. And it really shows, you know, loyal and true gets... It's a cliche. It's in our alma mater, but it's so damn true. So true, as they say, the students, when they sing it. You got to really love Oklahoma State to be here the last 2 years. And I recognize a lot of names in here that are commenting. I just want to say again how much I appreciate you, how much I appreciate you, Colby, when you stepped up to the plate and joined this show. All those – God, what year was that, Colby? Was that 2018? COVID? 2020?
I think it was
– during COVID.
I think it was 19 because I'm pretty sure 19 is when my time slot got cut and I got laid off at the franchise and I was looking for some things to do. I was doing some high school play-by-play and I think I was like this close to being out of the media. And then you called me one day and you were like, "Hey man, you want to do the Pistols Firing Pod with me?" Like, absolutely. And it's been a wonderful marriage. So I love doing this show. I love seeing the people. It was cool today, too, being down on the field after the game. And my daughter seeing people come up wanting to take a picture with me makes her think I'm pretty cool. And that whenever I do come in here for an hour and a half, 2 hours, you know, earlier people saw her. She came in here and gave me a hug before she went to bed. So I didn't get to tuck her into bed tonight. So it's nice for her to see that, like, yes, there are people that like this, that appreciate this. This is a cool thing that I get to do. And yeah, I'm very grateful to do this pod. Very grateful for our listeners. Very grateful to be a part of the Oklahoma State community and family. I've said that a lot tonight, but it's been two long, hard years, Carson, and nobody has left. Nobody has left. It's unbelievable.
Yep. Marathon pod is about to commence, but I would echo everything you said. And again, I think we're about to go, like, I predicted 10 wins, now somewhat infamously. But my confidence in how good this team can be hasn't wavered. My prediction confidence has wavered after week one. Week two, it's back alive. But I just think we're about to see an offense catch fire in the Big 12. And we're seeing all the scores being put in the chat here. Tech is struggling. They're down. K-State, we'll have to see. We really like Colin Klein. They lit it up again against an inferior team today, Washington State. But this could be a fun, dare I say, magical season. And it's back on track after beating Oregon, a game that no one thought they could win and they did so convincingly. And so I'm really excited. I want to say everyone that's still in here, buckle up. This is going to be a fun ride. So thanks to everyone that joined us. Colby and I will be back at it on Thursday for our preview show. Again, probably a lot more recap of what took place on Saturday. But Colby, this one's up there, man. It's up there on the list of greatest wins we've been able to watch as OSU guys. So this is a lot more fun show to do than we did last week, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, no kidding. It was a magical day in a magical place. Oklahoma State's awesome. That game was awesome. And I can't wait to see what heights this team could reach. Do they reach their ceiling? We don't know. It's sports, man. That's the beauty of it. We show up every Saturday and we see what we get. Today was a whole lot of fun. Carson, great show. Enjoyed being on with you tonight. Everybody in the chat, thank you so much for joining us. Everyone listening to this after the fact who wasn't able to be with us live, we appreciate every last one of you, our great sponsors. Thanks, everyone. As always, go Pokes!